be just like Wayne Dyer. You'll be a millionaire. It'll be great.
I want to be a millionaire.
Oh, really?
I do want to be.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, idiot. My grandma died.
Really? Your grandmother died?
Your mother's mother?
Yeah.
How mom? Recently?
Last night.
Yeah, when is the funeral? Is your mom upset? Was it expected? Is she old?
She was old and it was expected, but...
Sometimes it's a
Well, I don't have... Me and my brother don't have a relationship with her. My mom... She sounded ill. Which is probably like there's so much shit, you know, like, cause they had a bad relationship forever and then she like was taking, you know, would go down and get her like McDonald's and, you know, bring her little books and crossword puzzles and the like last little bits of her last couple years while she was ill trying to like, I don't know, just mend it before she dies or something. So, yeah.
Definitely.
No more grandparents for me.
Woo! Wow. First the grandparents go, then the parents go, and then you do if you're lucky. If you're lucky, it goes that way.
I'm rooting for the other way.
Oh.
I go first.
I think we have a bunch of us say so with that. Oh my god.
Oh. I'm kind of useless. I can't.
We can't talk about anyone we know.
Is anyone even on there?
No, probably not. But as it's recording,
better the other way.
As it's recording, or broadcasting, it's also recording, so it becomes a searchable, viewable.
Stuff to do with the last recording that
video.
We had.
Video.
That we may or may not want to post.
Oh yeah. That's what I don't like about it.
Well, maybe just fuck it. I mean.
Yes.
You know.
I may be doing it purely for voyeuristic reasons, though.
I don't mean that. I mean, fuck it. Like, even if you talk to them, talk about people, post it.
Oh.
You know. Whatever.
Good idea. Because there are a few people I'd like to talk about.
I mean, it's not like we sit around and shit talk about anybody. It's like occasionally things come out that are, you know, I must just say, truthful. So, post it. Who cares?
Earlier, someone came up the stairs here very slowly and meticulously. A Pebble Hill member.
Man made it.
And, she uses a walker.
Thanks.
Tonight they came up. There's a few additional cars in the parking lot. I don't know what they're doing.
Dave's meditation.
I think Dave has a meditation.
You're sitting in a moldy basement.
That he wasn't
silently.
Wasn't sure that he had.
Looks pretty small. You like this is small tonight. They're pretty small tonight too.
Yeah. One of those pre-Halloween nights.
I'm planning on being there tomorrow night.
Looking forward to it. Yeah, that should be some fun.
And I will dress warmly because I think being outside sounds fabulous even if it's freezing as cold.
Yeah, the fire will help.
Yeah.
I just wanted an excuse to wear my weird mask feathers and stuff.
So this lovely person that climbed stairs with some difficulty was two-thirds or more up the way of the stairs when she realized I was here.
Mm-hmm.
And let out a big oops.
Did she see you first, or?
Yeah.
She must have been all the way up the stairs.
Well, I hurt her, and the hallway was dark, so I reached around to create some light.
Yeah.
And then it was clear.
Oh, shit.
So I got this oops, and I said,
I don't know why I think it's so funny that everybody hates
me. You're welcome to join us this evening. You know, we don't bite. And she said something gracious like, I'm sure you don't. And retreated backward down the stairs to get the hell out of here.
Or, did you get that sense that she was
or away from me or both?
You got the sense that she really truly was a little disturbed. She ended up in the wrong spot and you would have.
As certain as you can be of anything, I would be certain of that.
I usually figure, you know, if I end up in the wrong spot, it's like, I guess I'm supposed to be here, and I'll hang out for a little bit just to check it out.
Well, you can see that it takes a certain kind of natural adventuresomeness to be here in the first place.
Yeah.
Without that, this is unappreciable.
Yeah.
Oh well.
So for those that are venturesome of spirit,
yeah,
there is a lot to, seemingly a lot to take in. I've been just having fun with sort of opening to a broader bandwidth of just taking it in, and that even includes just sitting in my office with my eyes closed and resting as I do so often during the day when I feel tired.
Yes.
Just like really taking in the amazing bandwidth of sensation just sitting quietly in a very quiet room all by myself. It's really pretty big.
That's the yoga. As a yoga. Not that that's the, you know, end in and of itself, but I think that's a common, if not somewhat necessary, symptom that one passes through.
What symptom?
Which is taking it in.
Yeah.
Taking it in is a profound symptom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They used to claim it was napping. I don't think it's actually napping anymore. Because I don't really sleep, and I never really did. I just sit and listen to the deafening quiet and feel the full spectrum of sensorium that is just all over me like flies on shit, just sitting here not moving. It's astonishing. And it doesn't shut up. And it doesn't necessarily keep me awake, but I'm kind of awake and I
like throw me.
Yeah. Yeah.
If this was an exam, then you know, you'd have to have an A plus. I mean, not that that's really, you know, a necessary destination or to be sought after.
There's really kind of nothing else to do. I think things have been sort of set up. In particular at my job, not all the time, but frequently during the day. Like I sort of reach that brick wall.
Well, who knows? Maybe
the wheel and just
maybe the principal observation is that this is throbbing, and that it's appearing in your experience as kind of a customized dreamscape. So even what we call our job, or the people in the office, and the politics, and the things to do or don't do, or actually all just appearing as a customized, right, stage for your experiencing to occur.
It's highly suspect that that could be anything other than the case.
If this is radiantly, quantumly entangled, and not possible for it to be separate from itself, and even in the midst of all of this pageantry and expressiveness, which is overwhelming no matter what discipline one might find themselves in, this is just a curious singularity, the dreams. That dreaming shows up as what you refer to as your experiencing. Nothing is true prior to this moment or even right now. As a quantum entangled, right? Unicity is a quantumly entangled profundity. Nothing is predestinedly true. So present experiencing is exactly what it is, including whatever filter we may be seeing it through or feeling it through. We only imagine that there is a sedentary or durable universe other than present experience, and then we call that my job or my office. But what if there's not? What if all of the frames of reference of our daily living, including our favorite coffee mug being kept in a certain part of the counter next to the coffee maker that is set to grind and brew at 6:30 a.m. on weekdays. What if that's just part of a customized kind of dream set? So one startle point that is fun to play with in the body of this tantra, it's kind of simple. This is we don't know what it is, how it is, why or where. Actually, it's not definable by place or time or consequence even. Present experiencing is occurring. It looks like this right now. Anything else that we stitch together is made up. That's crazy.
You can't explain anything.
Well, no, you can't. And it's okay that, and you don't mind that you can't.
Or that you try.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is the liquidation. This is the liquidation, and this is the grandeur of realization. Both. That's why it'd be best to walk down the stairs backward than to come into the room. Any of us can imagine an incredible inventory of fun things to speak about with each other, whether it's the office or the weather or the chemtrails or the giants, and on and on, right? I mean, thankfully, we're encouraged to sleep. Otherwise, we'd be up 24/7 engaging each other in anecdotal nonsense and
like little kids,
and dramas of all kinds. Yeah. Yeah, we would just stay at it. Thankfully, nature says, hey, that's enough of you and your crazy imagination. Why don't you just check out? And it's for that reason that there's a universe and a solar system and that we rotate and revolve around the sun. All of that is designed so that this can sleep. Right? You don't really know why things appear the way that they appear in terms of the rhythms of the natural world or the solar or extrasolar, right, universe. You don't, can't say why. What's the governing law? And that's true of this present experience. We don't know what the governing law is as to why this is even appearing at all, or in the peculiar geometries that it's appearing in, as the profundity of pattern recognition and an internal or activized internal storyboarding, scrapbooking mechanism that won't quit.
It doesn't quit, dude.
It doesn't quit, dude. It doesn't fucking quit, dude. And that scrapbooking, storyboarding mechanism that accompanies what we call the waking consciousness never tires of telling a story and creating a universe out of anecdotal hysteria and imagination. Like, for instance, your job, or what I did today, and whom I met, and the conversations that we had, or what impact that has on mitochondria in Andromeda.
It just brings up the most random shit. It's
totally random.
It's funny later, I'll be like, why am I thinking of this? What does this have to do with anything?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why am I thinking about someone from 5 years ago?
That's good.
Nothing to do with anything.
That's kind of like, that's, you know, where are your papers? Whatever's appearing in my experience, sentimentally or otherwise, it's like, I'm sorry, who are you talking to?
What
are you trying to convey? Oh, you're feeling a certain way about a thing? Oh, it'll pass. Or maybe it won't. Maybe it'll feel this weird for the get-go. Excuse me, who? 1 second, I'll get her on the phone. Oh, are you still on hold? I'll be right there. What? This doesn't end. That we promote ourselves with such curious confidence as durable creatures with a story to tell is somewhat laughable. Getting off of that train, I would say, is a kind of a fun challenge. Getting off the train of believing anything that is appearing in your experience right now could be quite curious. And this is the adventuresome radiant annihilation that is actually present, right, in each what we call moment, in each observation packet of present experiencing. That's a long-winded way of saying, which is all I know how to do, of sitting in your office and just taking it all in. The revelation of the throbbing nature of this vibratory...
The best word I can think of is, seriously, throbs.
It does.
Like, yeah. Dude.
Yeah.
It's really dense.
Throb on, dude, or give me a break. Now, that's a sensitivity which is, I would say, not typical. It's not like you go anyone on the Oprah Winfrey show and says, oh, it's fucking throbbing. even that, you know, little bitsy German leprechaun that charges too much money. What's his name? Eckhart Tolle.
If you would have said E.T., I would have known.
E.T. He didn't have the cojones to say, oh, it's fucking throbbing. Instead, it was a whole body of spiritual horseshit.
Well, it's funny because there's another video.
Uh-huh.
What's that guy's name? One of Lisa Karn's friends, Paul... something with an S. German or something.
Uh-huh.
Made this short little video, and I'm thinking maybe this could be somewhat reasonable. Because they're like, you know, they're kind of... That's kind of... They give presentations that are like, this is just doing itself, and, you know... And it was just another, like, kind of spiritual... The spin was different, and it was like a little... But that, yeah, no, it wasn't like, this is throbbing. You know what I mean? It was,
yeah,
again,
man.
Like... This is doing itself. However, if you realize that, you'll stop worrying so much.
I'm like, that's like,
how can you see that? How can you not see?
At each, let's say this is a magical trail of M&Ms, you know, It doesn't lead anywhere. There's no eventuality. It's just kind of a weird magical trail of M&Ms. Now in the popular culture, even in the popular spiritual culture, you'll start to see certain memes, right, and theories and celebratory observations occur in the common vocabulary of, right, those who are on the circuit being listened to or subscribed to for spiritual succor. And then you'll see some of these themes start to show up as non-duality speak or Advaita speak or Yoga of Radiant Presence speak or Traveling Lighter speak becomes more commonly used. You'd think, whoa, they're really on to something now. They're really sniffing this shit out. And they're not. Because this, no matter how eloquent it can be, in the maddening journey of revealing itself to itself, it will fetishize and trivialize anything and everything instantly.
It keeps trying to get me to do that. I'm like, no. And then I do. It's like, dude, why do you want me to do that?
That's what this does best. Part of our
head with horseshit.
Part of our conundrum, the puzzle that few talk about, is that we're trying to wring, let's call it coherence or spiritual succor, out of a only evasive, chaotic mayhem that will fetishize and trivialize everything that appears in it instantly. So all it is evasive. There's no substance behind its evasiveness. But on the way to enlightenment, we're looking for some substance behind the mirage, behind the curtain, that we can attain to or acquire. And you can't. That's how this is so wonderfully good, and perhaps forever so, were there such a thing. To be in plain sight and unseen. No matter how clever the motherfuckers on the Buddha at the gas pump genre get.
It's all totally contradictory, and it's like so obvious when you really are honest and look at it, you're like, there's holes and holes and holes in this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there can't be anything else.
There can't be anything other than holes in this. And still, one can take up residence in the beatitude of the ongoing evaporative mayhem. And touch the cessation of self.
In the middle of all this.
Yeah.
Not so good for self-promotion.
Very bad. Bad for self-promotion. Bad guru.
Very bad.
Bad teaching. Stupid idea.
Very bad. Extremely bad.
Not useful to me at all at this moment. No. And that's the good news.
Yeah. It's actually a really good sign.
Everything you might be suggesting is not at all useful to me this moment, and that's the good news.
That's like a earmark of you're about to get ripped off. Here, this is going to be really useful to you. It's like,
yeah.
Backing down the stairs.
That's right. What plays as contemporary spiritual vocabulary at the Science and Non-Duality Conference and most circuit teachers, whether domestically or even internationally, is all pretty much anecdotal crap. We're looking for a good time. We want to fill the retreat. We want to take photos. We want everyone to feel the Shakti. We want people to have, you know, demonstrative devotional outbreaks at the feet of the master so that they go through some kind of, you know, catharsis.
The funny thing is that shit works. I mean, it works for just the what they're trying to get. It actually works. You can go
open the cash and get the register. Catharsis. Yeah,
you may it delivers for the time being, but you come home and it's like
open the cash register.
And, you know, you're back to your just usual life.
So our challenge as erudite, sincere, and forever failing seekers.
I get the failing part.
Yeah. Our challenge then is to see if we can call it in some kind of conversation or togetherness or shared exploration, without falling prey to triviality and fetish.
If you can't fucking find it here, it's not real. If it's not here, then
whatever.
You don't have to do with something.
Well,
it's gotta be this.
It squeezes you into a corner. It does. Squeezes you into a corner. Like, excuse me, all of this devotional fanfare that's going on, or these glowing eyes, you know, dwelling in the self, or living in the yoga of radiant presence, or bouncing from 12-step meeting to 12-step meeting, living lightly, traveling lighter. I mean, yeah. And so? So if we just take the whole notion of this having some kind of deliverable off the table, close up shop. Nobody wants to close up shop, not the seekers or the gurus. They don't want to close up shop. And they don't want to tell the truth, most of them, about that this is throbbing and I don't know what to do about it. Okay. That's it. This is throbbing and I don't know what to do about it. Class dismissed. You know? Whoever, whatever, I don't even know what I'm saying. I'm checking this because it may be an aspirant or something.
Maybe it's whoever's been turning the camera downstairs.
Yeah.
What's going on down there?
It's the humidifier.
Oh, mm-hmm. I figured it was just the ghost. It's turning on the
That's what I was worried about.
Run.
Yeah, at least when she was alive, I knew where she was.
There's a density in normal groups of people. It feels almost heavy based on like the weight of consensus reality in most groups of people. Like, this is a very light group that way. And we still have, I think, a certain level of consensus reality. But, like, I've been playing music with my music friends on Tuesday night, the improv, just sort of wacky group of 10 to 20 people that get together and all make noise. And the consensus reality there is actually pretty heavy. I mean, it's lovely, it's fun, it's light, it's communication goes through music, but it's heavy.
Humans are heavy.
Yeah. I mean, this group is saving the world one note at a time.
I'm glad,
tune-in piece. And I'm not saying there's anything necessarily wrong with it in my mind, but it's heavy that way. And I think I like this because it's not heavy that way. It's like, toss all that, take all that horseshit, throw it out the window and see what's, like, right here staring you in the face.
This is challenging, because the world, as we call it, is loaded with disappointment.
It has to be, because you expect it to...
And being loaded with disappointment, we think that it might be useful to respond to that disappointment somehow. However, whether the environmentalists or, you know, the music group or the body workers or the GOP or the Tea Party, right? Everyone wants to help to make the world a better place according to their predominant consciousness, typically unexplored. So there's disappointment.
And desperation.
Tragedy. Beyond forgiveness, even.
I've lived that sense of, oh God, I'm going to make this mean something. You know, I got to make this life mean something, and I've got to like help save the world, and there has to be something important that I can wrap myself around and hold on to and ameliorate this desperation. And the whole time you're doing that, you're sinking and you're sinking and you're sinking.
All of
you
our...
You rise up, you finally take it, and you throw it out the window and you say, fuck off. This is what it is. It's kind of painful sometimes. It's kind of joyous other times. And like
all of our altruism is a selfishly motivated wish for the release of personal devastation.
If I just save the world, then I don't have to deal with my own personal
devastation. It's
I can be bigger.
It's stranger, right? It's a subtlety. It's an archetypal kind of urgency. It's not so literal.
Right? Desperate for meaning is how I would say.
Okay, see, that's more subtle then, right? Yeah. Desperation is weird in and of itself. And just as lovely a component as anything. The anxiety and angst of self is also, right, lovely tragedy, a lovely catastrophe appearing on the stage, right? And then any movement that's made to medicate, to ameliorate, to drown oneself, or to transcend oneself, are all spontaneously arising, and were there a motive, and it's really hard to find a motive, you could say it's about the release of my personal desperation. All altruism is, right? Is that. Something that actually transcended that, I wouldn't dare call altruism. If something could transcend that, if whatever being together means or doesn't mean, and if it's not heavy, if it's absolutely, you know, relaxed and elastic, then that could start to look like something other than altruism, other than compassion. If my principal identity is as a creature, as a consequence of the fabulosity of the bioluminescent atmosphere of the world, then I'm fractured. My consciousness, my filters are fractured. So this tantra is, one could say, combats in a playful and fierce manner this imagination of being fractured. Yeah. And when better to do that but now?
It's the only way it's ever.
Because this is all you got. You can't fix future fracturing. You can't repair past fracturing. If we care to do anything about anything, and we might not, we may as well apply that, whatever it is, here. Everyone wants an explanation or data or messages from spooks and ascended masters of whatever kind. As if this great data that we get from Bashar or Jay-Z Knight or all the local psychics that come and go and take money in exchange for promises. I don't even know what I was saying, but all of that is just so absurd. Completely wasted calories to place one's confidence in anything other than this immediacy. We think we want freedom, but we're terrified of being actually autonomous.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, and in particular, it's like totally lopsided. Usually nobody, I mean, I don't see like a balance where it's like they're investigating their autonomy and then occasionally going to see someone else about something. It's like the other way around, you know.
They don't have any time to investigate.
They don't, yeah, they're just, it's like, just keep running, yeah, just keep going, and
to begin to relish the simple nuance and throbbing textures of present experience is an absolutely radical way of being with the truth of being.
It's very weird.
How?
Why would that be radical?
To just actually just be.
Yeah. It's funny. I mean, it's
like
really
right in front of your nose. It's like right here all the time.
Funny.
As close as your breath.
Well, this happens to be the revelation of the entirety of anything that's worth realizing. Just this. And just this doesn't trivialize this what is. Because if it's just can be seen and felt as throbbing, subtle, chaotic, luminous, curious, throbbing. Then, you know, that's a rabbit hole into some, I would argue, some fairly profound territory.
Oh my God, I don't want to hear what just happened.
Not that I know what that means.
I do.
Okay.
In an oven throbbing, put it that way.
Yeah.
On a regular basis in an oven.
In an oven throbbing is good.
It's just freaking alive. Really alive. Good is it? It's alive when it's half asleep.
Well, you know, yogis that have some, let's just say, more experienced intimacy with this do speak somewhat candidly about, let's call it, the throbbing's recognition of the throbbing. Persists in a way that's very difficult to describe through all what we call waking, dreaming, and deep sleep. I don't know. There's no point in professing anything that's happened to you ever.
Doesn't matter.
No. Yeah, it just doesn't. So if this is throbbing as it is, and irreducible. Because anything that we might say about it is just another, right, spirited repartee of the throbbing itself. So isn't it strange that we start to actually get acquainted with, might I say palpably, that we can't be other than this. So these bizarre boundaries of body, mind, and self, the frame of reference that I call my life, which is just a present hallucination, can completely relax. That's fucked up.
Why not completely relax?
Isn't that a swell question?
When you drop the story that I have to do something, anything, that I'm in charge, all of that, there isn't anything left but just, oh.
Yeah. We could say intimate and present and subtle and kind of fancy Rumi-like words and stuff, but fuck that.
We kind of like fuck. It'll do.
Yeah, that's better. It's kind of more authentic. I mean, to say the silly things that Wayne Lickerman says about this, like the false sense of authorship and, you know, thy will be done, neo vita, speak. I mean, that stuff's fun. It's not unlike Paul Hederman slinging beautiful, hilarious diatribes about the confusion of selfing. Right? Mm-hmm. So we can all go on and on about selfing or the false sense of authorship and string all kinds of bullshit teachings together as if this has anything to do with those metaphors. Then everyone strives to eliminate the false sense of authorship. Or then we strive to be free from selfing. Or we, let's say, practice what Peter Brown might suggest we consider, which is noticing. So we want to notice, we want to notice well and effectively. And we may actually go back to the master and say, Master, I saw the trees as, you know, minuscule Goliaths pouring out of a radiant sky that smelled like Turkish taffy, and it reminded me of being 2 years old when my turtle died because we left too much chopped meat in the thing and no one wanted to clean it. And then I saw, and the master says, oh, good noticing. You know? Like, okay.
But then I went to work and I lost it all.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I thought I was really on the tail of this thing, and then I got pissed off because I couldn't find not a single pair of sunglasses. They just weren't where I thought, and I don't know why I was so despair, so upset that I couldn't find it, but I was. The goddamn sunglasses. And I'm like, why do I care? Because I do. Because I do care about it. Why do you care so much about the sunglasses? Because I do. Oh, but you're not noticing now. Shit.
It reminded me of today. I was like getting I got upset over like, not upset, but I was like a little anxious. I was in a hurry. I was trying to go somewhere, you know, in my own bizarre way. And someone put the pizza in the oven that I didn't want. He did. I just wanted to get one. I was sitting there looking at it like, God damn it.
You see?
I want the pizza out of the oven.
You see what happens?
Take my money. And it was just funny, but I really was just like, well, that's just what I, you know, it was like,
now,
this is it. Like,
well, there you go again. You see, false sense of authorship. I don't know what I mean. I'm just teasing. I don't know what the hell to say about anything.
Yeah, no, I know, but it's just like there's no. I guess it was spitting off of whatever you said. That there's like it's just a dumb example of no. You know. I don't know what I'm going to do next. And I can't, there's no way I can like stabilize it or, you know, it's like I was very aware of what I was doing. I'm still doing it. I was looking around to see if other people were responding to my irritation.
Well, it's like, why start or stop anything other than what's already starting and stopping of its own, you know, accord? A kernel of the great anxiety is that we are somewhat terrified and bewildered by the observation that this isn't about anything. Or that present experiencing is all that is. This can be a little disconcerting.
It's saying the same thing, actually. Those two things are the same.
Yes, they are the same.
Present is all there is. How it's not possible for it to be about me.
Yeah. You see, the imagination of my life or a life only can appear hypno-solutionally, like Bigfoot.
You just totally lost me. But I like Bigfoot.
The imagination of one's life can only appear hallucinatorially or hallucinatingly or hypnagogically. Yeah, right. These aren't real words. I'm sure they're not.
It's a scary movie. Hypnagogically.
I recently had a hypnagogically exam, but it didn't go too well.
Didn't go too well.
No.
I have to go see my hypnotist about it. It's like Tom Cruise waking up from his sleep in Vanilla Sky.
It is like that?
This is.
Oh.
You see, remember he was under the influence of a serum and a programming solution so that he would go on living with his original face before his crazy girlfriend ran him into a wall and mangled the shit out of it.
And then he might be
in the trees. Yeah. How did she get in there? She must have snuck in through the side door and then they gave her a part or something.
Yeah, figment of his imagination.
So that's what this is. Or the, you know, the metaphor of the Matrix. Or a thousand other curious, you know, movies and science fiction adventures, children's stories.
Just snippets from pop music tells you all about
that. Absolutely.
And how can anything come down here?
No. Now, in order to have that glorious confidence, this has had to shown up in your experience with enough verve to render you mute. It has to appear with enough verve as or in your present experience to reflect upon a throbbing, non-hierarchical, quantum entangled, evaporating weirdness that cannot be corralled by language. That's Rigpa in the Dzogchen playpen. seeking is the natural consequence of the illusion of disappointment. Disappointment is the consequence of the illusion that this is about something.
It's about something, you better get it.
This being about something is the consequence of the illusion of time or space or the primacy of experiencing itself. Somewhat like the dependent origination. Dependent origination is, forgive me, it's not committed to memory in terms of the steps or the words that are used to define the steps, but it has an accordion-like feel. It's like this because of or as the result of or begets or begat or begatted by or begetted by. So it's a like dominoes, you know. And then you could say as the kind result of dependent origination, experiencing appears as of the nature of a, you know, separate being in a either a luminescent or flesh-bound egg. And then so the Buddhism suggests the winding back, going backwards through the doot-doot-doot-doot-doot-doot, like a dear friend crawling down the stairs backward to get away from you. Take a step back. You go backwards so that you can kind of go to the scene of the crime. And so the gift of dependent origination is metaphorically or literally, whatever that means, going back and back and back and back through various layers of myth to the scene of the crime, which is the throbbing itself, resolves the hallucination of a disparate self in psychological, geophysical, biological time. Yeah, it's the big erasure. So is, you know, Vipassana practiced a certain way. It is a big erasure. Unfortunately, in so much of this very refined and delicate Buddhist practice, including jhana practice, which is, you could say, the sublimity of breath meditation taken to exotic, blissful conditions. I'm not talking 20 minutes, you know. Like jhana practice for those that are just, I guess, fortunate or unfortunate to be initiated into it. Well, like dependent origination, take it back. Like the Vipassana, it's an erasure. All of these are forms of erasure so that the assertiveness of the dream doesn't get in our craw and then create, right, suffering. That's the thread that weaves throughout all of these, you could say, schools of Buddhism, is the unraveling or the unthreading of suffering through one or several forms of participatory erasure. Which leads us where? Here. When? Now. To the observation of what? The, right? The great throbbing. We can pay too much attention to the mechanics of erasure and lose sight of the already present and already prescient and evaporative great throbbing.
Don't mess with me about right here now. I'm trying to get here. Go away. I'm doing a practice to get me here.
Yeah, that's right. Please don't bother me with what's present. I'm trying to get to what's present.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is why things like Dzogchen or other, you know, I don't know, left-hand, right-hand path, depending on the metaphor you like, are held in some disregard. Because they're the startle paths. Instead of spending so much time and effort poeticizing about the nature of suffering and the consequence of things, you basically start with the revelation of the primacy of the great throbbing. And as you can see, even the most dutiful employee will abandon her work from time to time to immerse in the beatitude of the great throbbing. That's the fruit of this yoga. And of course it doesn't stop there, since this has no bottom. It sneaks up on you to see that without any cleverness on your part, you've really skirted the entire issue of human disappointment.
Zero cleverness. I mean...
You know, if someone like Peter Brown says, look over there, what's the suggestion? The suggestion is that your present experience or the beatitude of the great throbbing is so off the charts, so dispassionate, so transcendent of dispassion or even passion, that look over there simply says, I mean, it's a kind way of saying, you've got to be fucking kidding me, you idiot. Right? It's like, you've got to be fucking kidding me, you idiot. Look over there. Well, then rather than abuse anyone, you know, he's a kind man. He says, look over there, and leaves the implication for you to discover. Yeah. Now, it's weird that you can live your shitty life. Why not? And at the same time, though no one can explain why or how, you skirt your shitty life entirely to discover and hang out as best you can, by invitation only, in the great throbbing. It's not like you've resolved your issues. Hardly. They can come and go. I mean, whether the pizza was in the oven or not, or whether I had sunglasses or not, or whether there's chemtrails or not, or... Yeah. Whether there's, you know, 1,000 genocides going on right under my nose while I eat, you know, Stonyfield chicken. I'm no good. Don't count on me for any goddamn revolution. I'm not an ethical vegan. I mean, I kind of wish I were, but egads, when it comes to participating in progressive, you know, spiritual or political endeavors, yikes, I like lurk in the shadows.
You're too generous. It's like the tar baby. There's nothing for this to stick to.
What do you do with a room of 300 people and like, hey, really, it's nice that you all came. But you know, what? What? Why are you here? What bullshit have I or my lovely wife, you know, Mukti, been slinging at you so that you've actually come here to listen to some bullshit that might come out of my, you know, non-dual mouth? You gotta be fucking kidding me. Yeah. I can feel it. They're gonna invite me to the next science and non-duality conference. Hey, this guy's like, he's like rip-roaring fun.
Oh my god. You would be fun. I predict.
Yeah.
If you were there, it would be the best.
I predict. You gotta get
it. Nice guy,
saw your guy for president.
Yeah, right. Oh, shit.
Just say what you got to say before you get shot. That's all.
Yeah, quick. Say it quick because you're going to take a bullet, man.
And then we'll bury you.
Yeah, you're going to take a bullet.
Got it all set up already.
You're out of here. I mean, the great throbbing is cool. It's what? More than cool, right? It's the end all and be all of the imagination of consciousness itself. Of the reflective, right? Dreaming, beguiling nature of consciousness itself, and all stories told, and all sensorium, and all fractal expression at all levels of so-called life on this earth and perhaps everywhere, were there and everywhere. Mm-hmm. You see, even Matthew McConaughey, whom I trust, will once again fail to deliver the goods by going interstellar. And I do want to see it in IMAX. Hi.
Who's Matthew McConaughey?
Please. He's one of the most brilliant actors of our time. He won an Academy Award for his role in the, what was it called, club?
Oh, the AIDS one.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it truly was a courageous and brilliant performance. So now, in his next movie role, he'll be getting into a ship manufactured by humans that has the capacity to do what no man has done before. Thank you, Gene Roddenberry. In a contemporary, big screen, IMAX thriller, Matthew McConaughey is going to captain a ship that goes interstellar. That means he's flying iterations, exponents, I don't know how many, of the speed of light. Now, in Star Trek days, they were doing this all the time, like it was nothing. And I think it was so far out that I wonder even if the most ardent Trekkie even appreciates the absolute incongruity of traveling iterations of the speed of light or traveling through wormholes or other such membranes to get to places that it would be impossible to get to within the bosom of relativity. But Spock and Bones, Sulu, Uhura, Kirk, Chekhov were just fucking rummaging through space at multitudes of the speed of light and remained somehow intact on the Enterprise, not being shattered through a meteor storm or an asteroid belt or some kind of magnetic field, but were able to get to their destination within minutes, countless light years distant from where they began, at warp 8. I've been giving it all she's got, Captain. Yeah, so it's like, what are you people doing? Now, to them it was like, ho-hum, are we there yet? You know, now I'm going to beam you down. I'm going to dematerialize your body, your clothing, all your nasal hair, and your weaponry and communication systems.
dematerialize you and rematerialize you on the surface of that planet. Hopefully in a friendly atmosphere where you'll encounter someone with pointy ears that you can fall in love with and fornicate with, and we'll do something with the offspring someday. Da 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 da. Fornicate with extraterrestrials or Star Trek. Call it what you will. Yeah, and so now Matthew, thank God, is going on a similar journey. And, you know, we as lay persons and even brilliant theoretical astrophysicists are, you could say, undecided and not in agreement about the possibility of corporeal bioluminescent human getting in a craft that can travel in real time at iterations of the speed of light to a planetary system that orbits a distant star. This is fucked, but it's really fun. It kind of suggests, if you give it a little bit of attention, that no one has any idea whether a craft built of even exotic materials and the finest of welds could, under some kind of impulse momentum, travel even a fraction of the speed of light, let alone exponents of it, and get anywhere or survive.
We do particles that fast, right?
We sling particles around that fast. We blew something up the other day that we tried to launch into space, and it just...
Yeah, there was a lot of food on that rocket, too, apparently. Poor fuckers in the space station are like, there go the provisions. God damn it.
How much money was that? That's what I would
say. Oh, yeah.
You know? It's like, you know, everyone's dying of Ebola and all this stuff, right? It's like, let's just launch a space, whatever that was. That must have been millions of dollars. I don't know. You know?
Millions, you think?
Like, just blow it up. Uh-huh. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't pay much attention.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure it was the fucking lie.
Oh, yeah. No, that's, yeah. Yeah, you have to turn the paper this way to fit the number on the,
I'm sure,
on the invoice.
Right.
That's right. You have to turn the paper landscape to fit the number.
Yeah, just to pay the employees to show up to watch the launch was probably the sideways number.
Even light has a, according to the relativity-ers, a finite limitation in terms of its speed, right? The speed of a photonic impulse or a photonic packet as what? As wave, as particle, as quantum entangled radiant handshake? It takes 8 minutes and something seconds for so-called visible light emanating from the so-called surface of the sun to get to the surface of the earth, right? So even something that's a mere 93 million miles away, which is really no distance at all, still takes 8, call them human minutes, whatever those are, to travel relativistically from the surface of this glowing orb to the surface of this, right, magical water planet. So I don't know how fast Matthew is planning on traveling, but I'll be there when he launches. I mean, when you look at the Hubble Deep Field, right, the small square inch in some dark corner of between constellations,
right? Galaxies as far as the eye could see, packed into no meaningful aperture at all.
That little tidbit totally blew my mind. Never knew that.
And these are impressions, right? The light impressions are being received by sensitive instrumentation that, in the case of the Hubble, is traveling outside of the influence of our atmosphere, so it's unfiltered by, right, gas or not purely electromagnetic, but it's unfiltered by gaseous impact and very subtle electromagnetic as it's outside of the envelope of the atmosphere. So in this film, right, I guess the Hubble took a photo or a digital impression, because it aimed at a small little chunk of sky for a long, long time to gather as much subtle impression as it possibly could from that so-called direction, and revealed a panoply of galaxies beyond imagination.
And we think we're so important.
But the same metaphor is right here, really, I think is what you're kind of pointing at. It's like, okay, so we don't have a telescope or a microscope, but
yeah. You
can kind of point, you know, in a room is like the amount of subtlety that you can pick up.
The great throbbing is itself, and the great throbbing, how do you refer to the great throbbing as a unicity which transcends the appearance of the volume of an observable universe? Even in the midst of so-called space, where there's nothing that can be meaningfully found or detected by our right prehistoric primitive instrumentation, the great throbbing is, you could say, there. Or the great throbbing is this. This isn't about anything. That's hard enough to even consider.
Or you consider it and then 2 minutes later be like, let me tell you. Because that's what I do. And I'm like, oh, Christ.
And it is a undigestible and unfracturable quantum entangled self-transcendent revelation, right? Radiant revelation. So this experiencing, whatever it is or isn't, the argument from yogis in the know is that this is all that this is. And that's so strange to us, because I'm a creature, I'm dwelling in my crappy head, I'm sitting in a room, it's within, on a campus, within a town, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, on a planet, by a star, in one small parsec of a humongous spiral galaxy, which is one of billions, if not countless, uber billions or trillions or God knows what word you want to use, galaxies that fill what exactly? A beaker? A thimble? Yeah. UFO! So, in order to frame a present experience that is something, about something, the consequence of something, a destination, even the hubris of, let's call it an enlightenment, you have to make so much up.
So much. But it's good. It's so good.
Making shit up.
And making shit up.
It
and
is
making
good.
You take the bait.
I think that would be a more honest word for God. Take the bait. Oh, take the bait.
And take the bait is a joke. It's like, you have no, God, you know, when God throws bait at you, it's like the best, most amazingly awesome, insane, you know, he's already got you, and you're like, hey, hey, I didn't want to take that.
Yeah.
It's like, nope.
Yeah.
Too late.
Yeah, that.
Wait, I didn't.
This is the great ruination. It's the great erasure. It's a fun challenge to delve into this texture or quality of reflection or exploration, the nature of present experience, without making it worldly or causative, or that there could be any possible deliverable, as in something appearing in my life as an advantage or an amelioration of some kind.
Like I'm somehow magically not going to be neurotic anymore.
That would be nice, but don't tell me. Yeah. I mean, who knows what impact any adventure, right? Who knows the impact of the fruits of any adventure? You know, you sign up for a mystery school, there are going to be fruits of that adventure. You go to yoga class, you take ayahuasca. There's going to be, call it fruits of that adventure, which of course includes everything. So if you go on an adventure in search of the great throbbing, and the great throbbing is kind enough to visit you back, I don't know what's going to happen next. I don't know what to say about this. I mean, saying something silly about enlightenment or self-realization seems like, what? What? Because you have to create so much in the first place to be eligible to be the proud owner of realization.
Then you miss the whole dreaming. You miss everything that you just kind of said about the, like, you immediately kind of have to be in a world, a person in a world.
Yes.
And so it takes you right back in it.
Yeah.
And that's like, you're being enticed by that, it seemingly, make-believably, all the time. So that's not what I want more of that.
Oh, Supreme, take the bait. Dear, take the bait. Leave me the fuck alone. I beg you. Yeah. Right. Consequence, frames of reference, human life, negotiating with, corralling, protecting, preserving, ameliorating, advantage seeking is all take the bait. As this unravels, metaphorically speaking, and take the bait is somehow curiously nudged out by direct encounter with the great throbbing, then that does what it does. Cool, leave it alone. Making DVDs about it.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen anyone make an actual DVD about it yet.
Seems strange. being without a future is really, really fun. Without the myth of future and the bracing, the manipulation that accompanies it, this can be really fun. It's reported, you know, by yogis and yoginis of great accomplishment. That, you know, the startlement or revelation of the texture of being heals the rift, heals the fracture of body, mind. It's funny how it heals it. It evaporates. I mean, it's not like, you know, like you heal a wound, right? So the wound re-knits with the right kind of topical treatments. Reality heals the imaginary rift of body-mind through spontaneous revelation or spontaneous evaporation, which can also appear for the aspirant or on the aspirant's journey as that. It can appear as tastes, right? Tastes, forgetting, taste, forgetfulness, taste, forgetfulness. That's what it does. You can't predict, nor do you need to, how this will absorb you entirely, like the blob will take out a movie theater. I don't know why everyone was running away from the blob. It seemed like just you'd want to just, you know, jump in.
Take a flying leap.
Take a flying leap into the blob and be completely dissolved. But no, they ran away. Steve McQueen warned everyone around the blob. Mm-hmm. Have we gone too far? Have we gone over time?
Oh, I'm just cold.
How much lighter it is without a future. What a future there's like. It's just exploring.
You're gonna clean my cup too. This does work.
People are doing my dishes. How can I take your program?
Someone's gonna make hot chocolate pepper and my dishes.
People are kind to me and give me food. I'd really like to take your correspondence course.
Okay.
what is this thing that's plugged into the wall? It's really loud.